This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Confrontation, man to man.
Blitz
is defined as a sudden, savage attack. It is indeed all this. The effect is sure. The premise is simple. It's a basic, primal confrontation, man to man. No excuses are offered. None accepted.
Welcome to the latest edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com.
Looks like a radio station.
Now, here are your hosts, lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers.
Pure athlete, yeah.
A transcend race, hombre.
Matt Butler.
I don't talk man. I back it up.
And we are chock full of that, man.
Damn right.
And Jeff Howe.
It's still real to me, damn it.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
If you're going to blitz, come strong, but don't come at all.
Coming strong with another edition of Longhorn Blitz.
24/7. I'm Jeff Howe.
Get it back on track, though, wherever you're listening, however you're listening. Thank you so much for being along with another ride on the latest episode of the Longhorn Blitz podcast. Get this podcast anywhere you get your podcast. Search Horns 24/7. That is Horns, the number 2, the number 4, the number 7. All together, no dashes, slashes, or spaces. When you find it, click that follow button. Get every episode of the Blitz when it drops, and then if you'd be so kind, please leave us a 5-star review. I've seen some of you have done that, and it doesn't go unnoticed. It does go appreciated by us, so we appreciate it very much. Let me bring in the rest of the team. He is the master of the soundboard, the drop machine extraordinaire, our lead research analyst on Longhorn Blitz, and a daily fantasy guru. He is Matt Butler. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well, man. How about you?
I'm doing well. You're Miami Boston prep because you are the daily fantasy guru. You got your color coded charts over there. Have you done any more research to find out if, in fact, Jimmy Butler is Michael Jordan's biological son?
I have not found that out yet. His number is one less, so maybe one less than him. But I did tell you the stat before the game. Since the Bulls got rid of Jimmy Butler and Fred Hoiberg and him clashed heads, it has been 5 playoff games for the Bulls as a franchise. I believe 71 now for Jimmy Butler.
There you go.
Playoff Jimmy. Himmy.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Sired by the GOAT, perhaps? That's conversation for another day. I'm fascinated by that conspiracy theory. A man who loves a good conspiracy theory. He can talk pop culture or any number of topics. He wears many hats for the Austin Radio Network, most notably co-hosting Ball Don't Lie each and every weekday from 3 to 7 with Mike Harge. But for the purposes of this podcast, he is our lockdown corner on Longhorn Blitz. Lifetime Longhorn, 2002 UT All-American, 2002 semifinalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, fourth round draft choice of the New York Giants back in 2003, spent his NFL career with the Giants, Lions, Bears, Bucks, Broncos, and a year with the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the CFL. When he was done with football, he got himself back to Austin, Texas, in the 40 Acres, where he earned his degree. Whenever that team ring comes back in, we will make sure he wears it proudly. Nevertheless, he is a card-carrying member of DBU, and when you get that All-American honor recognized by the NCAA, they make sure you get one of those black cards. Number 21 in your program, number 1 in your hearts, Mr. Rod Babers.
Damn good intro, brother. Appreciate it.
I do my best. Gentlemen, I want to start with this. This is really the main thing. And you can get over to Horns 24/7. We're going to have football. Actually, a couple places you can get. You can get over to Horns 24/7. We've got, you know, daily updates there on recruiting and team. And we're getting into June, so I'm going to start writing football again. It's a lot of baseball right now, but football and basketball are always top of mind for me. So you can go over to the site and get your daily updates and any breaking news. Go to hornfm.com. Check out my Longhorn Notebook segments, plenty of Steve Sarkisian audio from the Texas Fight Tour stops, Also, Rod, are your rants of the day on? Are they pulled out separately?
No, but you can go get the podcast. Yeah. And go check out the rants
go,
of the day.
Go check out Bald Online.
Most of the time, they're Texas football related, if I can help it.
Support Rod. Support Rod and Hard. Support Bald Online. And check that out. So, you know, there's stuff there that you can get. But I wanted to focus on one thing today. And this really just kind of got me down a rabbit hole, a cornucopia of thoughts, if you will, mm-hmm. when I saw this. Athlon Sports, we're at that time of year where your preseason publications are getting ready to come out.
Yeah.
Athlon Sports released their preseason All-America teams and the preseason All-Big 12 teams. Now, the preseason All-America teams, you've got a few Longhorns on there, and I don't think it would surprise anybody which Longhorns are on there. No Longhorns on the first team at all. But you go to the second team, Xavier Worthy, mm-hmm. Kelvin Banks on the second team. Mm-hmm. That's it for the second team. On the third team, you've got JT Sanders at tight end. You've got Jalen Ford as a third-team linebacker. I probably would have had him higher than the third team, but I'm not working for Athlon.
He's been getting a lot of disrespect this offseason. I noticed that, too.
You think it's still that? And actually, I'm going to hold that thought because I'm going to get to something else here in just a second that I think jives with that. See, it's the cornucopia. You're adding to the cornucopia, Rod. I appreciate it. Then you go to the fourth team offense and defense. I don't know why you need a fourth team All-American, but yeah, whatever.
I'll say, hey, for Rod Bees of the world, that's why, damn it. Give it an 14 All-American. Throw it out there, please.
Athlon Sports has Byron Murphy and Jalen Catalan listed as fourth team All-Americans in the preseason.
Day, man.
But you go to
it's
the
all-time intro.
Yeah, exactly. But not for fourth and third team All-Americans. Where would Rod Bees be?
It's true. But you go to the All Big 12 team that Athlon has, and you know the first team is some of X-Man, JT Sanders, Kelvin Banks is on the first team, Byron Murphy, Jalen Ford, Jalen Catalan, Keelan Robinson is a kick returner. You go down to the second team, Christian Jones on the offensive line is on the second team, Devondre Sweat, Baron Sorrell, Bert Auburn, second team kicker. But you got to go all the way down to the third team defense. Okay. Before you get to Jahdae Barron, Athlon does it weird. They have let me count the number of DBs because they go safeties, corners, and then they have left like DBs listed. So they have for sure 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Rod, there aren't 8 defensive backs in this conference better than Jahdae Barron, are there?
In the Big 12 right now?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say so, no. Not in my opinion, but. I don't know exactly who they have there, but I would say since, you know, if you would have had maybe this last class that just left, because you had several guys, I think, who are going to play in the NFL from this class that are pretty good. But I would have him in the top 8, but like I said, we don't know how it's going to shake out. Is he the best defensive back in the Texas secondary?
Yes.
In your opinion?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think he probably is too.
Because we talked about the Terrence Brooks factor, like we just it probably in terms of just talent, it probably is Terrence Brooks, but in terms of being a proven commodity, we just haven't seen it yet over a whole season.
Yeah. I wasn't even throwing him out. I like Terrence Brooks, but I wouldn't say right now he's in that conversation with the best. Ryan Watts is the guy, but for me, Ryan Watts is. I don't want to be disrespectful. He is. He's really good, great even, with a specific task, which you're asking him to do on that boundary side, which is disrupt and throw off the timing of the route and make sure you get your hands on receivers and reroute them.
Yeah.
But like I said, I worry about him sometimes once the wide receiver is into the route downfield, once they get vertical, about him being able to sink his hips and get in and out of breaks. I'm not the only one who's had that concern. I heard Michael Griffin talk about it too. He thinks he's a safety actually at the next level. Mm-hmm. But I digress. I think he's really good at that. In terms of all around 5'2" DB, that all around skill set, I wouldn't put him there. I just think he's your best bump and run corner. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
And Jaron Thompson is, you know, he's the vet there. He's the older guy. He's the guy that should be the air traffic controller in that secondary because he's been there longer than anybody else. I wouldn't say he's more versatile of a DB than Jahdae Barron. I put Jahdae Barron at the outside corner. Obviously, we know he can play the nickel. And hell, like I said, even this year, they should play more 3 high safety. they saw I saw them sprinkle it in like during that Tech game, you know, a few times.
Yeah.
But hell, now you're deep at the safety position with Jalen Catalan and Keaton Crawford and Jaren Thompson, and hell, they used Jay Barron in that role last year. He could do that too. So he's probably the most versatile and the most effective at all those different spots.
I think if there's anybody that you'd say would be better than Jadae Barron in that secondary, it would be Catalan. But the caveat with Catalan obviously is
I wouldn't even count him because he hadn't played with Texas yet. But I wouldn't count him. Yeah, if you want to count him, then I'd say, yes, he's better than Jadae Barron.
It's kind of like I was talking about this on Light the Tower today. I was just doing some random Cowboys thinking, and I was thinking about Tyron Smith. And, you know, there was a lot of buzz going into the offseason with the Cowboys going to say goodbye to Tyron Smith.
Yeah.
And it's not that Tyron Smith isn't a productive player. When he's on the field, he's still really good.
Oh, of course.
It's just the when he's on the field part of that is becoming a bigger issue as he gets older. And with Jalen Catalan, it's not a matter of talent. It's not a matter of scheme fit. Because, hell, Rod, he can fit into any scheme you want him to, whether he's a nickel or a middle field safety, boundary safety, whatever, however you want to use him. He could even play some corner. Doesn't matter how you use him, he can play and play at a really high level. It's just, can he stay healthy? But, you know, the first team, it's kind of hard to argue with who they have as their first team DBs. I mean, Kendall Daniels at Oklahoma State, Jalen Catalan, and that's a reputation alone. And a lot of these are just looking at numbers, too.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Most of the time, these things are just based off of who had the most numbers, even if numbers that aren't even good, like, say, DB tackles could be viewed as something that's actually negative because you aren't covering the guy well. Yet you'll see people with a high amount of tackles be valued high in preseason.
That's how I always knew growing up. That's how I always knew you had a bad defense. If your safety was your leading tackler and he had like 100-plus tackles, you knew you were probably a bad defense.
Yeah, well, most of the time. Depends on how they use their safeties. Like the Cowboys use a three high safety. They use three safeties, so they move their safeties around a ton.
This was back in the day when I was covering Baylor.
But you're right about
that. Maurice Lane had 135 tackles. Well, yeah, and you were dog ass on defense all year. And I love Maurice Lane.
Yeah.
A lot of times, like, corner tackles doesn't really matter if you're looking at what corners do. But then, like, I guarantee if you look in preseason polls, guys that have higher numbers get the benefit of the doubt ahead of guys that don't have the higher numbers.
But the two corners they got here, Josh Newton at TCU, was a really good player last year. Yep. Kobe Bryant at Kansas was a really good player. On the second team, TJ Tampa at Iowa State, Malik Dunlap at Tech, Kobe Savage at K-State, Aubrey Burks at West Virginia. You can't tell me any of those guys for sure are better than Jadae Barron.
Yeah. I think it's just kind of going off kind of some of the things, factors Matt brought up. But like I said, it's good for Jadae Barron. He didn't – I don't want to see him, you know, satisfied or complacent. He should be hungry.
Light another fire.
Yeah, because he's a guy that's got first team all Big 12 potential.
He had 11.5 tackles for loss last year.
His instincts are – they really are unbelievable. Like you can tell that he watches a ton of film and that he believes all of his keys and his cues, which can be dangerous. I will warn you, if I am scouting Jadae Barron, man, I'm double moving Jadae Barron all day, every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or I'm doing against him.
The wide receiver screen and go, which UTSA actually got Texas on early on.
Yeah.
I'd see a ton of that. The screen and go, hitch and go, double moves, out and ups. He's just so aggressive. And he's great at it, but I think that's just kind of the natural progression of trying to exploit really aggressive players. I mean, Trayvon Diggs, look at him in the NFL 2 years ago when he was jumping all those routes. Yeah, he was getting a lot of picks, but he was also getting beat deep a ton.
Yeah.
Because teams were like, all right, well, if you're going to jump the route, he'll win his, but we're going to win one or two. And they kept taking their chances, and you'll win one or two with aggressive players. And what they plan on is that, you know, being able to exploit your aggressiveness will make you less aggressive and you'll back off of it. What you want to, as a coach, you want to encourage them to continue to be aggressive. Like, don't lose that. You got it. You're going to get beat anyway. Everybody going to get beat.
Yeah.
All right? You rather get beat making plays, and you'll make more plays than you give up. So that'll be the challenge for Coach Gideon and for Terry Joseph. Like, no. Don't lose it, man. You got it. You're going to get beat. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
You're going to warm back to his pocket. I'm like, I told y'all. He don't get beat. That's all right. But that's just because he's so aggressive. But he's going to make more plays than he gives up ultimately.
And those are the sort of the signs of, like, when you can tell that you're not only facing a well-coached team, but if you really have a well-coached team and how that they can sort of expect – the opponents are going to see those keys and do things to then you know, make you maybe be vulnerable. But if you can sort of counteract that, like the same thing, Eric Spoelstra is doing it right now in the Miami Heat, where you see Jimmy Butler on one side, they'll clear out, and that's how it was for the first two games. And then you would see Boston adjust and really spread out, try to cover the other side. So what they do last game, they started making Bam Adebayo crash the lane. He'd be pulling in multiple defenders and get in the backside of the play multiple threes because he knew how they were going to counteract what he was doing. So then they come and counteract what they're doing. And that's sort of the battle that you can get, especially when you have a player like Barron that, you know, you're reading those keys and know teams are going to try to make you vulnerable. But then if you have your safeties in connection with that player and try to make it to where the team defense can be aware of those scenarios or your player's strength that they may be viewed as vulnerable and still be able to capitalize upon it.
Yeah.
Ron, I want to
turn the strength into a weakness.
I know we talked a lot of secondary last week, but I have a secondary question, and it might be a dumb question, but I want to pick your brain on it regardless. Because I remember when we first started the show, we were coming off of Shockey Brown's time at Texas, and you admitted you were not a big Shockey Brown fan.
I like Shockey Brown. He just had really bad eyes.
Really bad eyes. Yeah. And Mikal Thompson was another that. We said, did you say he had really bad eyes? Yeah, it turns out Mikal's was a different. He legitimately had bad eyes.
Yeah, his was vision, though.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I remember that.
When you're breaking down tape, can you tell the difference? Can you spot the difference between a guy that has bad eyes and bad instincts versus a guy that just is over aggressive?
Yeah, I think so.
Does that line get blurred maybe sometimes? Or is it thin?
It can be, but I think for guys who are just really aggressive, like I said, they end up making more plays or as many plays as they give up. Ultimately, I think if you've got enough of a sample size, the guy with the bad eyes, you're going to see it show up more on tape, and he'll end up basically being exploited or giving up more plays than he makes.
Okay.
I just think that's the way it comes with, you got bad eyes. That's how I just think. Like, man, you got bad eyes. You got great instincts, you end up making more of those plays because your instincts, after a while, if you're continually getting burned, all right, on the same play, you'll adapt and evolve. You're a great player. All right, that out and up won't get you again because you'll use the upfield shoulder as your key. You're like, all right, you know what? I'm going to jump it, but I'm jumping with the upfield shoulder. So I might not be able to get the pick to the house, but at least I'll get the PBU. But if it is an out and up, he's got to run into me and run through me. You adapt. You're a great player. That's what you do. And that's kind of really the slight difference between, he's got really bad eyes and not, man. The guy's just really, really aggressive. And that's, to me, that will be the difference. But hell, I'm sure every coach has that.
Yeah, I just I ask because I think for the common fan, when the ball's in the air, if the DB's not in place, you're like, oh, he must have read something wrong or his eyes are bad. But like we talked about in the case of Ryan Watts might get beat deep because it's just a physical limitation in his skill set that he doesn't have.
Yeah, yeah. I just think for Ryan Watts, once you're past the line of scrimmage on him, then you're into the weaker part of his game.
Yeah.
And so as a player, that's what he's got to improve on, right? Honestly, his play at the line of scrimmage is great, but once somebody's around Ryan Watts down the field, that's what he's got to work on, sinking his hips, getting out of his breaks, whether he's going to flip his hips or open his hips, like those things when there's a six route or somebody's trying to get inside of his leverage. So those are just things. I mean, he'll figure that stuff. I think he's a good player, a really good player. So I think he'll figure that kind of stuff out. But like I said, if you got bad eyes as a player, you will be exposed.
Okay.
I mean, that's why Shockey Brown, did he make more plays or did he give up more plays? He gave up more plays. Yeah. I mean, that's just what it is. If you got bad eyes, ultimately, that's not instincts you're working with. You're just staring into the backfield, and every now and then, even a broken clock is wrong twice a day, right? You end up making a couple of plays because you were staring in the backfield. Quarterback didn't see your bad eyes, and the quarterback made a bad read or made a bad, pre-snap diagnosis, whatever it is. But if you got great instincts, really good instincts, like I tell you, guys like Nathan Vasher, ultimately, your instincts will adapt to the circumstance and situation. So they're picking on you because you're so aggressive. Trust me, Nasty Nate would make the proper adjustments.
So here's the difference. Basically, in a nutshell, the difference is the guy with the bad eyes, he's going to keep getting beat by the same stuff because his eyes are just bad. And he's not capable of making the adjustment. Whereas the guy that's just over aggressive and relying on good instincts, he'll make the same thing's not going to beat him multiple times. He'll adjust at some point.
He may still want to peek in the backfield, but he's like, all right, you know what? I'm just going to take my three-step read. Like I said, I'll adjust my angle to the football. I will, or you know what? Some corners like my boy Nasty Nate, maybe they were playing bump. He's like, no, I'm going to play off. Give myself a little bit of a cushion so that I, you know what I mean? It just depends on how everybody's skill set is a little bit differently. Like I said, to me, you use DB, you got to make more plays than you give up. If you're giving up more plays than you make, then I'm sorry. Then your if you're still relying on instincts, you got bad instincts. Then you shouldn't be relying on your instincts.
Right.
You got good instincts if you're making more plays on the ball. Like I said, everybody's going to end up getting beat.
And then that's where also like being somebody that's just technically sound can make up. Like if say you don't have the foot speed to make up a play, you just aren't gifted physically like that. But if you're somebody that like you were saying, always takes the right step and understands how to flip your hips in the right scenario and do all those things. That's how a player like Quandre can play so fast because he does everything so right that he doesn't lose. Exactly. You don't lose that split second hesitating. You don't have one wrong foot that's going to cause you to then have to change direction the wrong way. If you do all those few technically sound things, it can make you then have actual recovery speed more so than a guy that, say, has that foot speed. But if he's not doing all those things technically sound, you can't make that up. So, like, there's all those grounds in between where you can actually do that.
Agreed.
And, like, Quandre, I'm sure somebody listening to this will go find something that I'm missing. But off the top of my head, the only time I can really remember Quandre, like, getting beat soundly in a game was I remember that TCU game his senior year where it was just – they were just throwing the ball up to Josh Doctson. He was covering Doctson on the outside at corner, and they were just throwing the ball up to him.
I thought I remember Baylor, them just lighting
him
up.
I think his freshman year against Baylor.
They were just throwing it deep, and they had all that speed. Yeah. They just kind of lit
when
him
that,
up.
That was, they still had Kendall Wright and Terrence Williams.
I remember that, but you're right. I mean, it wasn't very often that teams exploited his lack of size.
And that Baylor offense, they were completing deep balls at like just an absurd rate at the time.
Yeah, they're probably the most accurate deep ball team in the country.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
I believe so. Yeah, close to it anyway.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
I wanted to kind of talk to
you. Yeah, I think it's, like I said, I think it's a subtlety. It's a subtle thing. I'm sure like an actual coach would be able to give you like a very technical definition of the difference. But, to me, like I said, you don't want to, I'm from the Coach Aquino school of DB coaching where I don't want to mess with too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't want to go in. If you got great instincts, we'll just let you go with your instincts. I'll provide you with some tools so that you can, accentuate your skill set so that you'll have more options to solve problems. But if you are just a natural DB and you're good at it, why the hell am I going to go in
there
and try to
rework
everything?
You're not going to overcoach it.
Don't complicate the process.
Now, some guys do need you to rework everything.
Yeah.
Some guys, the guy can just cover.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to let him go. Like, I know his stance may be a little bit funky, but if it works for him, man, it works for him. But if his stance is hurting him, if he's getting beat, if he's locking his hips because of his stance, all right, let's tweak the stance.
Yeah.
But hell, when I go coach young DBs, I go, man, let me show me what you got. And then we'll work from there. We'll actually work backwards and reverse engineer the whole thing. Why'd you get beat? You got beat because you were out of phase. All right. How do we get you back in phase? How did you get out of phase? All right. You weren't on the hip. Why weren't you on the hip? Well, because you got beat in the line of scrimmage because you locked your hips. And then work backwards rather than, all right, this is how. And when we talked about this with Coach Ash, right? He was so rigid and telling his DBs, you got to do it this way.
Yeah.
And DBs kept getting beat on the deep ball. And it's like, it's because they're trying to do it exactly how coach said to do it.
Thinking too much, yeah.
Everybody's got their own way of playing it. God knows how to play a deep ball, let them play it.
Yeah, I think of that, and granted, look, the guy I'm going to mention was one of the very best to do it at his craft. I heard Pete Rose on Fox one time talk about hitting. Mm-hmm. And they're like, when you're in a slump, like, Rod, I know you do a show with Hard, so you hear a lot of baseball talk. You're like, well, you need to change your swing. You need to change this. And Pete Rose goes, no. When you're in a funk, it's like there's six things you can change. You can step up to the plate, step back from the plate, step up in the box, step back in the box, choke up on the bat, choke down on the bat. He's like, your swing is your swing. Your swing got you to the big leagues. Exactly. Your swing is not the problem.
Yeah, that's a great point. Your swing is not the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, you're a good
enough. And again, it's one thing for Pete Rose to say that,
but I
know.
Totally agree. Yeah, it's about don't overthink it. It's like, it goes back to, you know, be coachable, don't be a robot. It's like, nah, man, no, you're still an athlete. You're still an athlete out there. You still got to go be an athlete and let your instincts actually ultimately take over. You're not thinking when you're making your best plays in football. Yeah. Everybody knows that.
And you don't want to be reaction. Thinking. That's hesitating whenever you do that. So you don't want to blur those things and cloud the mind of a player so he can't play as free.
Yeah, it's muscle memory. It's reaction. Yes, you know, you're thinking, you're pre-snap diagnosing everything, but, man, your best plays, every player will tell you, nah, man, I really kind of just saw it. I knew the opportunity to be there, but me actually making the accurate throw or me, you know, cutting and deciding to flip my hips, that was all muscle memory and just natural reaction.
I want to go to offense, Rod, and again, I don't know if you've thought this far ahead. Is there a way you'd like to see the targets distributed? Because I don't think, because now that Jatavion Sanders has a full year where he's been a proven commodity and he's going to enter the year as one of the best tight ends in the country, he'd be probably on a lot of first-team All-American lists if Brock Bowers wasn't returning to Georgia, but such is life.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've seen Sark go real heavy on 3-4 guys. He did that at Alabama. He's done that his first few years at Texas. Would you like to see that distributed more, or do you just want it to, hey, just have a competition in camp and whoever the top 4 or 5 guys are, those are going to be your guys that gobble up the bulk of the targets?
Yeah, he's not going to change, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
And I don't want him to change. I mean, he's got his 4 or 5 top guys, and that's who he's going to funnel all the targets to. I do think that instead of, you know, kind of starting and really the genesis of your passing game this year, instead of it being Xavier Worthy and kind of working backwards, which I think he did most of the time last year, I do think, and X-Man can get the same amount of targets, I do think you should go through JT Sanders.
Yes, we talked about that, yeah.
I do think he should be your first feature in the passing game. Trust me, Xavier Worthy is going to get a ton of targets, and he should get fewer targets. Honestly, maybe 8 to 10 less targets or fewer targets, and he should be more productive with those fewer targets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Looking at X-Man now into his junior year, last year he had more targets and was less productive.
Yeah,
that is not what you want at all. I do think JT Sanders is easier to find mismatches and matchup advantages across the board. Whoever is matchup on JT Sanders, it's 90% likely that it's a matchup advantage in your favor.
His catch percentage year over year, Worthy's dropped by 8%.
Oh, yeah.
He was 60.2 in 2021. He was 52.2 last year.
Exactly.
And your point, Rod, 62 catches on 103 targets. Last year was 59 on 113.
Exactly. And listen, X-Man is great. I mean, I love me some Xavier Worthy. He'll be drafted potentially in the first round. He's got that kind of potential. But I do think last year there were too many predetermined force-fed throws to Xavier Worthy, and we know that's just Sark. Once he gets obsessed with a receiver, like I said, but we talked about the role for Xavier Worthy changed when Isaiah Nayor went down, and he was typecast into being the deep threat, which made him a lot less efficient overall as a receiver, and he couldn't be the deep threat and the featured wide receiver. And it's just, like I said, it's easier to just take away a wide receiver. You can put a safety over the top. You can put your best cover man on him unless you move him around. It's easier to take him away, and there's a better chance your best wide receiver will be matched up on their best cover guy, one of their best cover guys. JT Sanders will be matched up on most of them a linebacker or a safety, and those guys don't cover as well as corners and nickelbacks and slot corners. So to me, I would start the passing game with that guy. That also kind of helps you with, you know, the intermediate. It'll keep Sark from being obsessed and fixated with the deep ball.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying JT Sanders can't go deep, but I think it'll help the quarterback get in the rhythm early on.
I agree.
You know, I went and did some research on Xavier Worthy because I was thinking about, man, how – because he has been really, really – he was really inefficient. Of the 30 most targeted FBS wide receivers, third lowest completion percentage when targeting Xavier Worthy, lowest single-season receiving yards – third lowest yards per target, fewest receiving yards per game.
Damn.
Yep. And you hit it on it there.
It was because you were force feeding the football too much, and you have other targets. X-Man can get his, But I think this should be the year you feature JT Sanders, who's on the verge potentially of being the best tight end in the history of Texas football.
Yeah.
And all he needs is a little bit of attention in that offense next year. And by the way, Texas hadn't had a 5-tool tight end since, what, David Thomas, Jermichael Finley?
Yep.
I wouldn't even say – I JT Sanders is a better blocker.
He might be.
Than J. Mike was. And
I don't disagree with that.
I don't know if Jermichael Finley listens to the show. I know he follows us on the socials and
I love
stays dialed in.
Yeah.
So I love Jermichael Finley. But, yeah, I think probably you'd have to go back to David Thomas. David Thomas would be the last time Texas had a legit 5-tool tight end. And honestly, in terms of being a vertical threat, Rod, it might be a healthy Bo Scaife that was really the last true legit 5-tool tight end that could do everything.
Yeah, you had two of them there with him and David Thomas, and I mean that offense was built around them. They ran a lot of 12 personnel.
I mean, that shows just the talent that we saw from Sanders, being a guy that at first it was like offense or defense, and then it ends up being his first year of productivity at the D1 level, and he's able to do that and put up those type of numbers. But you hit on it, Rod. Like, the inefficiency that we saw from Worthy, I would say, is a product of the offense more so than it is of the player, because we always individualize player statistics, but a lot of the time player statistics are products of the offense. Sometimes the player can make the offense appear to be better than the offense actually is, and there can go the other way, that you can have products of the offense and you can have a guy be inefficient, but it's because the offense had certain deficiencies and things that they need to improve on. So I think this one errs more on the side of Xavier Worthy was sort of the victim of the inefficient offense.
I agree with that.
I hope that the targets do get spread out a little bit, because, and we saw where Sark had to funnel usage. When you look at the target distribution last year, Worthy led you with 113. Then you've got JT Sanders at 72, Jordan Whittington at 72, and then fourth was Bijan at 29.
Yeah.
So it's really one, and then there's a pretty sizable gap between kind of one, and then the guys tied for second, and then there's a sizable gap between those guys tied for second and number four.
I do think, because you have to add in your injury, that was big, and then Bijan's presence alone, just being the multifaceted player that he is, Sark should use him more in the passing game. He had zero targets versus TCU for Bijan, so he should have been used more in the passing game. But I think that this year you will have, because he's got, listen, Jay Witt, if he doesn't use more of Jay Witt this year and his targets don't go up, that's a dang coaching mistake, all right? That'll be a miscalculation by him. We all assume JT Sanders is going to get more targets too, and we assume that AD Mitchell's
going to get his.
Going to get his as well on the outside. Where are you taking those from? I think you take them from Bijan and the running backs, of course, but you take a little bit of them away from X-Man. I mean, X-Man's targets went up last year. Like I said, he was less productive. X-Man, his targets actually should be dropping subtly every year, but the productivity should be going up. Yeah, more yards, more touchdowns, but fewer targets. You know what I mean? Because he should be weaponized in that fashion. He should be featured. But last year, he was typecast as the deep guy slash feature. Too much of a burden on him. Let him be the guys featured. Now you got a deep threat in AD Mitchell or Isaiah Nayor, which one ever's back. And then you got two guys you can feature in the passing game now. You got JT Sanders and X-Man.
I'll give you the Alabama numbers in 2019 when Sark had those four first-round wide receivers. And not to say that this group is going to be that group, but so just got to make that caveat. Because some people will take what I'm saying, Rod, and be like, oh, Jeff said that.
You're going to have four first-round wide receivers.
No, it's not what I said. If you look at the target distribution that year, Jerry Jeudy at 108. So what you're talking about with X-Men, he's in that 100 to 110, not going above that.
Yeah.
Devontae Smith at 88, Henry Ruggs at 55, and then Jalen Waddle at 40. Mm. Those were your top four.
Yeah.
Your next wide receiver was, that's so stupid loaded that offense was. John Metchie only got 8 targets.
Yeah.
Because Najee Harris got 33 targets.
And yeah, to your point right there, when you look at just the target shares across the board, if you were to just look how it's dispersed, because, Rod, you pointed it out, just like the amount that Worthy had, Worthy, now the team had 381 total, but Worthy had 113. Then JT, exactly 72. Jordan Whittington, exactly 72. Then when you add up Bijan Keelan.
That's more than I thought for Jay Witt.
And then when you add up Bijan Keelan and Roshan, exactly 72. So we're talking 72 to those three running backs, 72 to Witt, 72 to JT, and then 113 to Worthy. And that sort of just shows, like, Worthy almost playing the two roles that he was, because normally your deep threat guy is a guy that's less amount of targets. Normally it's like he gets like 50% of the targets as of the other receivers. So if you give Worthy had his 72, but then
that
you
was
also,
Waddle and Ruggs in that offense for Bama, and they were at 40.
If
and
you
50
have 40
targets,
that go 39 that go over that were the deep threat. So it was just like he had the load of two receivers once Naylor went out.
Yeah. No, it's just because it's interesting because Sarkis said the tight end position is the most, is the second most important position in his offense behind quarterback. Those are his words. And yet he hasn't really had a tight end that he has weaponized within an offense and featured. But like I said, Sark is evolving. He also never really weaponized 21 personnel until last year and got deep into it because he's like, no, I got Bijan and I got Rojo. Mm-hmm. So when you got, right, you got elite tools, and he said also on the record, I change my offense every year. Every year, like, you know, the philosophy and everything pretty much remains the same, but I look at all the pieces and then I start to build my offense based on the pieces that I have. That is him on the record on that Pivot podcast. So this year, there's no doubt I expect JT Sanders to be, and hell, he might have already been. I haven't looked at Sark's tight ends. I'm going to go back and look at it. He should be the most prolific tight end ever in a Sark offense.
Austin Seferian Jenkins at Washington would probably be it.
Okay, yeah. He should, honestly, JT Sanders should just throw it out there. Just based on the weapons that Texas has and the, you know, the lack of a running game, where he is now in kind of the hierarchy of the passing game. And like I said, man, Texas, the tight end position has been an endangered species on the 40 acres for, like I said, going back to, you know, Jermichael Finley and David Thomas and Bo Scape. Man, that's a long, long time ago. So Texas, really, the part of the offensive identity crisis for Texas, a little bit of it has been the lack of a 5-tool tight end. Actually, and the crazy part about it, they've actually produced some NFL-caliber tight ends because they were so good at one specific role or blocking, or they were projects like a Tyrone Soups, and we know that, you know, projects at tight end, the NFL loves those kind of developmental projects. But for Texas, man, the tight end, and it's crazy, Tom Herman was so obsessed with the tight end position. He recruited the hell out of it, but he just collected them like little dolls. Like, it was weird. My dog doesn't, like, tear up any of the toys that we give her. She just kind of daintily carries them around and just places them everywhere, and then she just collects them, and she never destroys them, so they just continue to accumulate.
Hoarder.
Yes, and that was Steph. that was pretty much Tom Herman. He would hoard tight ends for some reason, but he never used them. And the truth is, the tight end position can fuse your philosophies. It can fuse the, and this is why that's why I know Sark likes it. I've done my research. It fuses the power ideology with your spread philosophy.
Yes.
It is the way, it's probably one of the only fuses. If you got a freakish back like a Bijan Robinson, you can do it too. But you really can't do it with a lot of other positions. The tight end position naturally fuses it for you if you got a real 5-tool tight end. And Sark has it now. And, you know, I was reading this article about this strange about endangered species, about the gray wolf in Yellowstone, because I become obsessed with, like, national parks, because I'm kind of a nerd. But they basically reintroduced the
it's crazy.
Yes, they
changed the whole ecosystem.
They reintroduced the gray wolf into the Yellowstone like 25 years ago, and they found that it basically had this domino effect. So without the wolves, the coyotes kind of ran everything, but the elk population, like, doubled and tripled. Mm-hmm. It exploded. And they were grazing on all the willows and the aspens, all right, that they usually would graze on. They went crazy, and they were grazing on those. And without the trees and the songbirds, because they were overgrazing on all the willows, all right, they declined as well. And the beavers didn't have the willows and the aspens to help build their dams.
Mm-hmm.
And the dams, turns out, the shade from the dams would cool off the water. So the water temperatures in Yellowstone were rising as well. All of this because they were eradicated the gray wolf and it was damn near endangered, damn near extinct species in Yellowstone. They found out just reintroducing the gray wolf. It had that type of effect where
it moved the earth.
It changed
it literally
everything.
Moved the earth there.
It's unbelievable.
The streams, I've seen the exact same report on it. My mom had me send it out to my whole family like before last Mother's Day. It changed the whole ecosystem and caused the streams
everything.
To move the earth that then ended up growing things to where it wouldn't look the same.
Oh,
and
man.
Then it only because of the reintroduction of the wolves.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Like, I would encourage anybody to Google it. We didn't do it justice. But my point is, that's the tight end. Reintroducing the tight end position is like reintroducing the gray wolf into Yellowstone, reintroducing into the Texas football, into the Texas offense. It can have that type of effect if you utilize it and weaponize it the correct way. And I think Sark is the mind to do it. And I hope, and because he's on the verge of breaking all the damn, you know, all the records anyway. I mean, he's got last year, JT Sanders, 54 receptions, most by a tight end in single season in program history, 613 yards, second all time in single season. I mean, he can break all of these records. Most receiving yards in a single season, 637. He can easily break that. Most receiving yards in a game is 149. I can see him breaking that. Most receiving yards in a career, 1367. Hell, man, one more good season, he breaks that. Most receiving touchdowns in a career, 15. Hell, last year he had 5. I don't know if he can get 10 this year, but.
Yeah,
my point is, he's already close to being an all-time great tight end in Texas. Push him over the top. This year, if he doesn't finish this year as the greatest tight end in Texas football history statistically, I will be disappointed in Sark.
So I just went and looked at Sark's most productive tight ends. I went and looked at 2016 Alabama because Sark was the analyst that year with Lane Kiffin as the OC, and Sark did call plays for that national championship game before he went to the NFL. O.J. Howard only had like 40-something targets that year.
It was like
around 68 targets that year because he had 45 catches.
Yeah, so 72 actually is a lot. What did he get this year's, Matt, 70-something
72.
Targets?
72 targets.
So maybe that's a lot in Sark's offense for a tight end. I think it should be as many, if not more, next year.
I don't
and
have
if anybody's interested in the Wolves, I just retweeted it so they can actually
nice.
It.
Yes. No, it is. It's great. It's fascinating.
I don't have the target numbers in front of me, but looking at Austin Seferian Jenkins with Sark at Washington in 2011, 41 catches for 538 and 6 touchdowns. 2012, his best year, 69 catches, 852 yards, and 7 touchdowns. And then in 2013, 36 catches for 450 and 8 touchdowns.
I'll pull up the targets real quick.
So, I mean, like I said, he's already probably one of the more prolific tight ends that Sark has had. So I'm not going to hate on Sark.
Even in the NFL, the 2 years he was at Atlanta, Austin Hooper, I think, had 86 targets in 2018.
Okay.
And – That's the most I can find for a Sark tight end.
All right. So that's around the number we're looking for for JT Sanders.
That makes sense, though. Going from 72 to 86, that's another.
He's the best tight end in the conference.
Yeah, that's another, 14 targets.
And I think you should be taking away like 4 or 5 from X-Man.
If you think about it, that's
over to JT.
It's only
take 4 or 5 from Bijan. Move that over to JT.
It's only one extra target a game.
It's not that crazy when if he's featured, which he should be.
And it's pretty big if you look, because I pulled up the target share. So 72 targets would be 18.9% is the target share, which is pretty high for a tight end.
That is pretty high.
You look at Austin Seferian Jenkins, his targets, because you have implied targets too, which involves some throwaways. Let's not even use implied targets, just direct targets. He had 96 in 2012, which is 25.8% target share. And 2 years before, the year before was 51, the year after was 53.
Okay. So we're looking for 22 to 25%.
I just have a spreadsheet that I sent us all. Yeah, but it just has all the college targets.
He's awesome, man. That's amazing. He's like,
I
just
got
it's
just
where I pulled
that.
The John Harris targets from a few weeks ago.
Now that was a hell of a pull. Yeah. Pull up the Judd Harris targets.
Any targets?
You
this
sick
was
mofo.
It was. I'll give credit out to a different Matt that lives in Wisconsin. Matt Gajewski, a guy on Twitter that does daily fantasy stuff for college football. During quarantine in 2020, he just made an entire target share list of players from 2011 to 2020. You can look up any target shares.
Wow!
Oh hell, you didn't have anything. You didn't have anything else to do.
Shout out random Matt on the show. Man, there you go.
Another Matt.
Fantastic. I do want to get to two things, Rod. I was thinking about this. I want to go back to the defense real quick while we got about 10 minutes left. When we started this podcast, we talked about the nickel position being the most important position defensively in the Big 12 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Has it waned in terms of importance to you? And I thought about it from this standpoint, too. When you look at the teams running the three safety defense, mm-hmm. like Iowa State does and TCU does, the middle safety in the three safety defense almost has the same importance in terms of responsibilities that the nickel in a base nickel defense used to have.
I agree with that. Yeah, and depending on how many teams are running it this year, got to do some research. But, yeah, I agree with that 100%. It's crazy that it just, probably 5 or 6 years? I don't know, probably a little bit longer than that, maybe 6, 7 years, that now we can evolve this conversation that, yeah, it was for sure the nickelback when it was a lot more, traditional spread concepts. Because mm-hmm. And now the spread concepts have become so complicated and so evolved that I think now you're seeing the defense, and give John Heacock some credit there for popularizing the three high safety look. But now, yeah, just to really adapt to and adjust to the ever-evolving cheat codes that the offenses continue to utilize, you need that three, that basically what that nickelback used to be more flexible.
Yeah.
The nickelback just wasn't malleable enough.
And
the third safety, it lets you be malleable. You can go, now I can drop you deep high. I can put you down in the box. I can put you in the slide. Like, basically just gives you more freedom with that nickel.
The nickel, too, like the thing with the middle safety in that three safety defense, too, the thing that you like about the nickel is he's really hard for you to account for. Like, you can't run away from him based on alignment, just alignment alone. You mm-hmm. can line him up, right off the defensive end. You can line him up on the hash, on that third receiver, whatever. The thing that you like about the middle safety, and like the textbook example is, and I don't know what happened to this guy at the next level or whatever, but Greg Eisworth was the perfect middle safety for that John Heacock defense. Yeah. you can hide him very well. Yep. You can't run away from him. You can't scheme plays away from him because based on the way that defense works, he's going to find the football wherever it goes.
Yeah, that three high to me is kind of the defensive equivalent to the RPO. And I always say the RPO is a truth that tells a lie, right? It's you think it's a run, it's actually a pass. You think it's a pass, actually a run. Depending on how you want to play it, you pick your poison. Defense, that's why the three high works really well against Sark's offense, because Sark describes his offense as an RPO passing game.
Yeah.
And all right, what's the whole purpose of the RPO? Well, I count the defenders in the box. I make the right count. That determines whether I hand the ball off or whether I pull it and I make the quick game pass.
Yep.
And it's hard to make that definitive count when that dude's moving around and it's like, well, Coach said he'd be here.
Blurring the numbers.
Six? I think we got six.
But he's 8 yards off the ball, and you can't tell. Yeah.
So it is the defense way of – it is a defense truth that tells a lie. It's like, no, you thought you had the advantage of numbers in the box, but you don't. And that's why – and Sark's offense is getting better versus it. But still, overall, his offense is probably average like 9 points less per game when they face a three high safety look as opposed to more of a traditional two high or a single.
The other thing to that, too, it's really hard to get a zone running game going against that three safety defense.
Oh, I can see that.
Because it's a slower developing play. That middle safety can read it for a little bit longer, and he can get there.
And he's got better sight to it.
Yeah, that's why.
He's coming down usually from
From we know Tom Herman loved zone runs, inside zone, outside zone, whatever. And that's why it really felt like when they faced that three safety defense, like they were beating their heads against the wall. They're like, no, there's three safeties on the field. We should be able to run the football. This look is designed to run the football. Well, yeah, but if you're like kind of slowish developing run plays, then you're just, again, you're slamming your head against the wall.
You're falling for the lie, man.
The things, the type of runs that work against that. Go back and watch the second half of the Iowa State game. The runs that were working, it's got to be quick hitters. It really, like you said, Rod, it really eliminates the RPO. It eliminates manipulated action at the mesh point. Yeah. It's got to be decisive. It's got to be fast.
You want to go back to old school power football.
It's got to be downhill. Yeah, downhill. Like if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us running the football downhill, trying to smash us in the mouth.
Totally agree. That's exactly kind of reverse back to, which a lot of teams aren't. We talked about it, right? With the new evolution of the game, a lot of teams aren't comfortable with smash mouth football. You see in the NFL, we talked about this. Mm-hmm. Teams are now going back. That's the counter to go back to no pun intended, a counter and go back to power football, because teams are now built and constructed their defenses to defend the outside zone, to defend the zone running game. They can run sideline to sideline. You got DeMarvion Overshones all over the damn place. What can DeMarvion Overshone, what does he actually struggle against? It's the power running game, running right at him. Big man right in his damn face. Defenses aren't built for that anymore, so make the defenses have to defend that. And that's basically, if you're an offense that can go back and forth, that's what you want to be able to do.
Yeah.
And most offenses, you know, you just don't really have the personnel to go back and forth those, you know, types of styles.
Your runs at work are like, it's their gap schemes, but it's almost like, Rod, you remember like growing up playing peewee and maybe even high school football, like just the old school wedge play. It's like, hey, you're going to get a tackle guard double team.
Boom, boom.
You hit it up in there and you get what you can.
You
bury your face in there and you try to get you 4 or 5 yards.
That's what that defense, and
if you got a guy like Bijan who's a rare breed that can see it and can jump cut accordingly, yeah, he might turn that wedge play.
That's why Rojo also becomes a better option against those teams.
He might turn that wedge play into 18, but Rojo, to your point, Rod, that wedge play might be designed to get you 4. Hell, he might get you 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's about being adaptable.
Something it just triggered in my mind.
We're talking about power football in this podcast. It makes the football soul feel.
When that sort of triggered this, it was something I was thinking about a lot during, like around Super Bowl time, because you had like, 2 weeks to break down one game and all the focus on the Kelce brothers. But like, we always talk about defensively changing the picture. And, you know, so what the idea that the 3 safety look does, and it blurs those lines and changes the picture for the offense. And those are the type of things that when you watch, like say the NBA and the Heat tonight, they're totally possession by possession, might be zone, then they might throw in, they'll go man to man and just try to change up the looks to keep you off balance. And we always talked about the thing that made, like say, Tom Herman's offense so predictable was like he never changed the picture, and it simplified the process for the offense.
It
but
did.
Like the thing around the Super Bowl that fascinated me in watching the way that the Eagles play, they would do, because it would be a lot of stuff that you normally see, you're pulling guards or whatever, you know, and you could see Shano doing stuff that's amazing. But like Philly's like the only team that has a center that's their pulling center. And he has Jason Kelce is so athletic that instead of doing it with the guards, they did it with their center, and it changed the way that the linebackers and the safeties and all their alleys and everything they do, because it's just one tiny adjustment, and you don't have that many amazing, you know, centers that are athletic enough to do it. Mm-hmm. But just that one difference makes that offense so much more optimal.
I mean, it's so unique.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you don't know what you're seeing. And that tiny, when we were talking about hesitation earlier, those are the little type of things that if you can get a transcendent talent, it's why like Kelce's the highest paid center in all of football. But those little things that can change the picture for your opponent, that then make them not only maybe be confused and disguise what you're doing, but make them hesitate. That's all you really need in football, because you lose that split second and you hit a hole and they're gone.
Totally agree.
Okay, the last thing that I want to cover, and this is really interesting to me, when you look at that Athlon preseason All-America team, I mentioned Jalen Ford as a third-team All-American. He's the first Big 12 defender that shows up. And you go down to the fourth team, and the Big 12 defenders are Byron Murphy, Jalen Catalan. I thought there was one. Yes, Josh Newton at TCU. So basically, you have first, second, third, fourth team defense. You've got 4 guys from the Big 12. Rod, please don't tell me nationally that there are still some media members that have this flawed, preconceived notion that there is no defense played in the Big 12. There shouldn't be anymore,
couldn't
right?
Be. Yeah, I mean, it could just be a down year for defense. Like I said, I haven't done the deep dive. I'm trying to think of the national championship game
didn't help that image.
It did not. But who are the best defensive players returning in the Big 12? Does TCU return that corner?
Josh Newton
returns. He's a good player.
He should be there.
Jalen Ford obviously is in that conversation as well. He's a good
up front is where it really gets kind of muddy.
Have a lot. Yeah. Yeah, so exactly.
Well, like Johnny Hodges at TCU, Colin Oliver at Oklahoma State.
Colin Oliver's a good player.
If Catalan's healthy, Kendall Daniels, I like what he does at Oklahoma State. Oh, maybe one of those two Oklahoma guys, Downs or Stutzman. That Oklahoma defense, I don't think it can be worse than it was last year. Maybe it can be.
Yeah, and there's always a K-State DB that's in that conference. K-State's defensive backfield has been really.
By the way, lifetime Longhorn Van Malone coaching that secondary.
Yeah, they've been doing a really good job. Julius Brents was the latest. But yeah, I mean, I guess maybe it's just a down year. I'm with you. I think if they're basing that off a reputation, then that's a severe miscalculation. But honestly, and I love PK. I think PK's 2021 strategy about defense was also kind of based on a stereotype of miscalculation of what he thought the Big 12 was. And as I've always said, Big 12 is a running league right now. It's disguised and cross-dressing as a passing league. I think he thought it was a passing league, and I think it took him by surprise. They bring in GP. GP breaks down the ecosystem of the Big 12 for him, and I think now he has a lot more informed game plans and game plans that are more effective. So it maybe that is. It still could be some of that. Maybe it's a little bit of both.
Okay, I just didn't know. Just wanted to get that out there. Get food for thought for the listeners as they check out this podcast. But it'll be listeners talking amongst themselves and thinking amongst themselves because we are out of time. Matt, thanks for everything, man.
You're more than welcome.
Rod, we appreciate the time and the knowledge.
Anytime, brother, anytime.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
For Matt Farad, for everybody at the Austin Radio Network and the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM, 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com, where you get Rod B each and every weekday on Ball Don't Lie from 3 to 7.
Shameless plug.
You can also get myself and Craig Way on Light the Tower from 10 to noon. And thanks to Matt, get our archives, our classic interviews and shows are on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page.
Yep, just type in Longhorn Blitz.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Search Horns 24/7 anywhere you get your podcast. That's Horns, the number 2, the number 4, the number 7. No dashes, no slashes, no spaces. Click that follow button when you find it to get every episode of The Blitz when it drops. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review. For the Horn family, for the Horns 24/7 family, I'm Jeff Howe. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. And we will catch you again on the next episode.
You've been listening to Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com. Remember, for the latest Longhorn news 24/7, visit Horns247.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.